DW Africa Link.
Every year, powerful private sector leaders and heads of state rub shoulders in Davos, a town in the wintry Swiss Alps. It is an important yearly ritual organized by the World Economic Forum. This year, discussions on trade, tariffs, artificial intelligence, and of course, new American President Donald Trump took center stage. President Cyril Ramaphosa of South Africa led a delegation to Davos to increase visibility for his country's economy. But does Davos really help Africa's economic prospects, especially considering African resources or economic policies are rarely in the spotlight? Or does Davos provide a legitimate opportunity to change economic perceptions of the continent? That's what is coming up. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Another man at the World Economic Forum is South African Wamkele Mene. He is the Secretary General of the African Continental Free Trade Area, and he has a massive job on his hands. For context, this trade area, which started in 2021, is a really big deal, literally and figuratively. With 55 countries, 1.3 billion people, and combined GDP of around $3.4 trillion, the African Continental Free Trade Area is the largest free trade area in the world. 54 of the 55 African countries have signed the agreement, with 44 ratifying it. Analysts believe this trade pact, if fully implemented, can kickstart industrialization and diversify African economies. Striking deals and building business relationships is a part of Mene's job. And my colleague Ashitosh Pandey sat down with Wamkele Mene for an exclusive interview during the World Economic Forum Summit in Davos, Switzerland.
Mr. Mene, thanks a lot for joining us for this conversation. I wanted to ask you about your impressions of Davos. You were coming back to Davos. How is Africa being represented in terms of the topics being discussed here and in terms of the people that you're meeting?
Well, we have always a challenge as the African continent when we are here, and that is to reinforce a positive signal of the African continent, and that is from an investment point of view. As you know, many people around the world, the perception of Africa is that the risks of investing are very high, the risk premium is very high, the cost of investing is high. So we take the opportunity at the World Economic Forum to address these perceptions and to provide really the reality of the African continent, and we certainly are during this session of the World Economic Forum.
Yeah, over the years, you'd agree that Africa's presence has actually become stronger here in Davos. It's represented in terms of the guest list and also in terms of the participation on this main street here in Davos. Do you think Africa is now succeeding in telling its story in its own voice to investors?
I think certainly there has been a change the willingness to listen to the reality on the African continent. I think that our presence here does make a difference, so that investors realize that the whole of the African continent is not one big risk investment risk, that there are opportunities, and that the opportunities are across the regions of the African continent. Obviously, we are realistic about the challenges that remain, the cost of infrastructure, the cost of transport and logistics. These continue to be high. Instability in some cases. So we recognize fully that we have these specific challenges. But I think overall, the risk perception is not matched by reality.
Exactly.
Yeah.
One of the the big elephant here this time around at the WEF has been Donald Trump. He's come back into the White House. How do you foresee the next 4 years for Africa with Donald Trump at the helm of the U.S.?
Well, I think we can base it on past experience. The next 4 years will be based on what we know of the previous term in office. So I don't think that anybody is in for a surprise anymore. What we have to focus on as the African continent is an economic strategy that will ensure that we continue to accelerate industrial development, continue to accelerate intra-Africa trade, because this is where Africa's growth opportunity lies. It doesn't lie in export markets outside of the African continent, where we are able to consolidate an export market in Africa. That is sufficient for the African continent. Obviously, we are not going to disengage from the global economy, but the point I'm making is that if you look at substantial economies and economies that contribute significantly to global GDP, their growth points started when they were focusing on building a domestic market. China, India. China, India, the African continent, we are similarly populated. Therefore, there are lessons for us to learn from their experience. And that, therefore, if we take those lessons, it means that whoever is sitting in the White House or in Brussels or wherever else doesn't really matter. If we've built a strong enough domestic market that will sustain Africa's growth.
You mentioned intra-Africa trade, and that's where your organization comes into play.
Yes.
It's an ambitious free trade area. If you the Africa Continental Free Trade Area is it's so huge, $3 trillion in GDP. We're talking about 1.3 billion people. How do you rate the progress of this entire free trade area in terms of how many countries are joining, what types of tangible benefits you're already seeing?
When we came to WEF, Summer WEF, a few years ago during COVID, at that point, we were 1 year into the implementation of the agreement. As we speak today, there are 48 countries in Africa out of 55 that have ratified the agreement. In other words, there are 48 countries that are eliminating, reducing intra-Africa trade barriers to investment, trade in goods, trade in services. The political commitment, the political momentum certainly is very, very strong. We have concluded all of the legal instruments of the agreement, what we refer to as the protocols. All of those have been concluded. We are now fully in implementation mode. And finally, which is most gratifying, we see trade happening. We see goods transiting borders on the basis of preferences of the AfCFTA. Obviously, the volumes are not as high as we would like because it is early days, but we do see particularly small medium enterprises, which is very, very encouraging. Small medium enterprises that are taking advantage of this market, which is presented by the AfCFTA. A long way that we still have to go, but we've come a long way.
Yeah. What's working for this trade deal, and what are the challenges? Why some would say that it's happening at its own pace, which is, are you satisfied with that? Firstly, are you satisfied with the rate at which it is actually growing, or could the pace be faster, or is it something because it's just so big that it's just normal for a trade deal as big as this to take its own course and time?
I think, if you look at the European Union, and the economic progression in terms of integration of the European Union from 1947, it took a very, very long time. And there's were fewer countries. The AfCFTA is 48 countries, and soon, by the end of this year, will probably be 52, 53 countries that ratify the agreement. The complexities in terms of economic policies of these countries, the macroeconomic imbalances, the differentials in levels of industrial development, all of these factors contribute to an incredibly complicated and complex project to try to move all of these countries in the same direction, given the differentials that I've just pointed out to. However, I should say that with all of these tensions in terms of economic policy, we have been able to achieve policy consensus on a number of very, very vexing issues. Take, for example, industrial development, manufacturing of vehicles. This is an area where potentially many, many countries in Africa can benefit from, but they are not at that level of industrial development where they could have a viable auto industry at this point. Only two countries, mainly South Africa, Morocco. However, what we have agreed is that we need a roadmap, shortest time period, to set out how we're going to ensure we have a continental industrial development strategy that benefits all countries in Africa. Whether you have a population of 1.2 million people or 5 million people, we have to develop continental value chains that will benefit all African countries. So that these tensions that I pointed to, the differentials in levels of economic development, don't spill over over time where the agreement loses credibility because only a few are benefiting from it. But we have we have looked at the history of the European Union and how it got it right, and of course where mistakes were made in the EU, but in general, I believe that we're moving in the right direction. If you look at other global fora for trade negotiations, very, very difficult to achieve consensus in 25 years.
Exactly.
We have managed to reach consensus on this very difficult economic policy issues in 5 to 6 years. So we've made good progress.
Yeah, you mentioned the small and medium and size enterprises. Could you give us some examples of how these enterprises are benefiting because of the pilot project that the pilot phase of this trade deal is happening?
Yes.
So small examples of maybe a farmer in X country benefiting by selling it in a country Y.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is a Africa's economy relies, creates about 450, in excess of 450 million jobs, small, medium enterprises, contributing over 60% to Africa's GDP. So that is Africa's economy. It's not necessarily the large corporations. It is SMEs. Mm-hmm. To the extent that we can get SMEs to benefit from this agreement, I believe we will see more innovation, more job creation, and enhanced levels of competitiveness, particularly by young people. So in Kenya, for example, the first trade that happened, the government of Kenya had arranged cooperatives, smallholder farmers, mm-hmm. into cooperatives who traded, who exported tea, so that is value-added production, mm-hmm. Exported the tea to Ghana. Similarly, in Rwanda, we saw SMEs that are owned by women exporting cosmetics to other parts of the African continent. So these are examples of the targeted interventions that we should and have made, we should make and have made, to make sure that we bring on board small, medium enterprises across the African continent and across the regions of Africa. That's where I believe 20 to 30 years time from now, we will see the real benefits of this trade agreement.
Yeah, you touched upon this, the fact that Africa would like to rise up the chain, the value chain, so to speak, and there's been a lot of discussion around that it can't just be a source for raw materials and that companies need to come and build in Africa, mm-hmm. produce in Africa for Africa and also for export markets. How does this trade area play into this ambition?
We will not be able to achieve value-added export capacity if we are not a consolidated market, intra-Africa market. Mm-hmm. So the value proposition we make to an investor is that once you invest in one AfCFTA country, you have access to 47 other markets. You have access to one of the fastest growing regions in the world, second or third fastest growing region in the world. And so there is a value proposition for trade that will lead to investment, mm-hmm. and investment that will lead to trade within the African continent. It's interesting because there are many around the world, whether it's South Korea or Japan, there are many corporations that are looking at Africa as the next growth point for them, yeah. in terms of their market expansion strategies. Yeah. There are some corporations in Korea that don't have a presence at all on the African continent. And so as they are looking for new growth points, the African continent is certainly a very compelling investment proposition. However, we have to make sure, we as Africans will have to make sure that we implement these trade rules, we abide by the trade rules, yeah. we open the markets as we said we would. We apply dispute settlement rules where there may be disputes, either in investment, competition, whichever area you may be thinking of, to position the continent for investor attractiveness. We are also finding it very, very encouraging that big technology companies are looking at Africa's digital economy, mm-hmm. and the opportunities that investing in digital public infrastructure, that the opportunities that those are creating. We know that in about 15, 20 years' time, Africa's combined digital economy will be in excess of $100 billion. There are opportunities to invest in data processing centers. There are opportunities to invest in a range of technology-enabled financial services or banking services. All of these opportunities are embedded in a common market. Yeah. And so we are very optimistic about the prospects for the future.
You mentioned the digital economy, and that's a field where Africa does have a lot of potential. Simply for the fact that Africa on the technology front has found solutions, homegrown solutions for its population at multiple levels, in multiple parts of the society. I just wanted to ask you, there's a lot of buzz here around artificial intelligence. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Africa is, according to the IMF, is not that well prepared to take advantage of the benefits of AI. How do you see that?
Well, I think that whether we are talking about artificial intelligence, cross-border movement of data for commercialization, for commercial purposes, data protection, all of these different components of a digital economy, the continent of Africa has a very unique opportunity to leapfrog because we don't have the legacy challenges. In some respects, our lack of infrastructure previously is now an advantage because we're able to deploy technologies that are forward-looking. If you take, for example, mobile banking, yeah. The technology is the innovation,
exactly.
that was introduced almost 2 decades ago.
And almost with limitation that you had.
With
you
all of the limitations that were there.
Yeah.
All of the limitations that were there. So I think similarly, even with artificial intelligence, as we see more and more investment in digital infrastructure, I think the continent of Africa will similarly be able to leapfrog and be as competitive. Google has just established an AI center in West Africa, so clearly there is there's an advantage to being on the African continent. Whether we are talking about, as I say, artificial intelligence, or indeed if we are talking about cross-border movement of data, data protections, digital public infrastructure, digital identities, all of these various components of a digital economy, I believe we are well poised to take advantage of them.
Are you concerned that artificial intelligence could widen the inequality that exists between regions around the world, given that fact that a certain region is attracting much of the investments into artificial intelligence and some regions are being left out?
Absolutely. I think that if we are not careful, if we don't develop the appropriate regulations, we will see that race to the bottom, if I can call it that, in terms of investment for AI. We will see large sums of investments going to regions of the world that already have the advantage of pre-existing flows of investment. So that's why we have worked very, very hard to develop the first of its kind, the Protocol on Digital Trade, which includes emerging technology, AI, to establish an environment where the market is open for investors to invest in AI, to invest in digital technology in Africa with a view to innovation for emerging technologies. We have already done that in the Protocol on Digital Trade. What we are waiting for now is for the investors to come and invest in Africa, establish these platforms in Africa, so that the entire economy of Africa and the investors themselves can benefit.
And that's been a challenge, like where we see a potential in this whole continent and the way it's growing. It's one of the fastest growing regions around, according to IMF. But still, in the end, the decisions to invest are not being made as quickly as you would like.
Yes. And when we talk to investors, for example, here at the World Economic Forum, they'll say, well, first establish the regulatory framework to give us confidence, and then we will come. So we've called their bluff. We now have a protocol that establishes exactly that regulatory framework, which we believe should enable investors to have the confidence they need to invest, whether it is AI, mobile-enabled banking services, fintech,
blockchain, or whatever.
Exactly. All of these different areas.
Yeah. Lastly, I just wanted to get your outlook for the economy, the African economy in 2025. How do you see it develop from here?
Well, I think a large part of that will depend on what happens with the United States. We hear that there may be tariffs that are imposed on certain countries, and obviously an imposition of tariffs to a country or a region that is, say, Africa's largest export partner will have an impact on us.
Mm-hmm.
The general state of the of global trade, if we see a rise in protectionism, if we see a rise in investment protectionism, the state of not just Africa's economy, but the state of the global economy is not positive at all. It is not good to be trade protectionist. It's not good for the country imposing the tariffs. It's not good for consumers in that country. It certainly is not good for the country from whom the imports are coming from. As for the continent of Africa, that's why we have to accelerate our efforts to ensure that we boost intra-Africa trade, so that we provide some degree of insulation from what is about to happen.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Mr. Mene, for
Good.
Your time.
Thank
it
you.
A pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Africa is changing. Don't get left behind. Tune in to Africa Link.
That was DW's Ashutosh Pandey talking to South African Wamkele Mene, Secretary General of the African Continental Free Trade Area. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a crucial part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. Your insights are invaluable, and please tell us what you think of the podcast and if you have any suggestions of other topics that you'd want us to tackle and include in our podcast lineup, please do so. Remember to follow so you can catch all of the Africa Link podcast episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Kai Nebe. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.